This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Season 10 of the Art Curious podcast is sponsored by Anchorlight. For more information about their programs and residencies, please visit anchorlightraleigh.com. I don't talk about it much simply because it happened about a million years ago. But an interesting segment of my art education was the time I spent working in an art gallery in Los Angeles between my stints in graduate school. It wasn't for me for several reasons, but I am so glad that I had the experience because it taught me to use several parameters to identify and consider a work of art's value. I considered the edition number of a print or a photograph. I scoured a painting's surface for damages or repair. I used size, media, the artist's background, and more to help come up with a sense of how much a gallery could charge for its sale. In short, it made me a connoisseur, in the best sense of the word. It's a skill that I was able to hone slowly, with time, exposure, and guidance. Being a connoisseur takes practice, but the best ones can not only quickly identify something of quality and of major interest, but they might also be able to see things about the artwork that the rest of us can't see yet. Potential. A new direction. The next big thing. Some people think that visual art is dry, boring, lifeless. But the stories behind those paintings, sculptures, drawings, and photographs are weirder, more outrageous, or more fun than you can imagine. In Art Curious Season 11, we're highlighting the lives and work of the women who supported some of the world's favorite artists. Today, meet Berta Weil, an art dealer with incredible foresight who made many artists famous, including some of the biggest names of the early 20th century. This is the Art Curious podcast, exploring the unexpected, the slightly odd, and the strangely wonderful in art history. I'm Jennifer Dassel. If the name Berta Weil sounds a tad bit familiar to you, it may be because we mentioned her gallery all the way back at the beginning of Season 8, when we opened our discussion on some of the most expensive works of art sold at auction by referencing a painting by Amadeo Modigliani, which was shown in the only solo exhibition of his artwork to occur during the artist's lifetime. Modigliani's career-making show was a shocking one, attention-grabbing because of one of Berta Weil's ballsiest moves. She placed Modigliani's paintings in the front window of her gallery, a window that oh so conveniently faced out toward a police station across the street. Now, this may not seem like a big deal at the outset, but Modigliani's paintings, like Nu Couché, featured naked women sporting, shock of shocks, body hair. The police, scandalized, demanded that Weil remove the paintings, and she eventually did, but only after enough time had passed to make Modigliani's nudes and her gallery a major place to see art and engage with the avant-garde in Paris. So who was this revolutionary and forward-looking art dealer who gave Modigliani his big shot? As we're about to find out, she was one of the most fascinating women in the world of art dealers in Europe, someone with an incredibly long-lasting legacy, but whose name hasn't quite reached the highest echelon of praise because, perhaps, she was a woman, and a Jewish woman at that. It's time to give some much-needed recognition to the great Berta Weil. Esther Berta Weil was born on November 20, 1865, to a large but modest Jewish family, with Bert, as she was known. All of her siblings were equally known by their middle names, as the fifth of seven children. Most of the familial support seems to have come from the family's patriarch, Solomon Weil, because their mother, Jenny Levy, was a bit obsessed with theater and would apparently spend most afternoons at the Comédie Française, so she was a bit checked out in terms of childcare. It was the Vial children who had to pick up the slack for the financial health of the family as a whole. Now, remember, the Vial family wasn't a wealthy one, so each child needed to be able to make their own way in the world. Solomon Vial's aim was to gain apprenticeships for his kids, but Berthe's health during her childhood was a bit precarious, so she needed to be able to choose a position that allowed her to work without taxing herself terribly, which is how she ended up working with a distant cousin named Salvatore Mayer, a prince and curiosity dealer working at the center of Paris's thriving art market. Berthe began working with Mayer in the 1880s while she was still a teenager, and she stayed there for quite a while, working with him for at least a decade. And it was there under Mayer's supervision and guidance that she began training the most important part of art dealing, her eye. After years of looking and really paying attention, Vial began to understand the differences between a quality print and a shoddy one, to identify a sellable antique and separate it out from an unsellable piece of junk. She could look at something and quickly understand its value. In 1897, Salvatore Mayer died, which was a sad event, naturally, but also kind of a fortuitous one. It granted Berthe Vial a release so that she could move toward establishing her own gallery and her own future. Alongside her brother Marcelin, she opened a gallery that focused predominantly on antiques and printmaking, just as Salvatore Mayer had done and in what she had trained as an expert in her own right. And Berthe and Marcelin did okay for a while, but their differences in management of the gallery would eventually cause them to part ways. And I'm of the mind that it is a very good thing that Berthe stopped working with her brother, because her interests were already beginning to change. And it was her new directions and excitements that would put her in the history books. Around 1900, the Vial family gallery caught the attention of an important Parisian art critic named Claude Roger-Marx, who likely visited the gallery because of his own interest and knowledge in printmaking. While there, he struck up a conversation with Berthe, and the two became friends, with Roger-Marx sharing his opinions on the art market with his new protégé. And his opinion was that modernism was where it was at. "The avant-garde, Berthe," he cried. "The avant-garde is where you should focus your energies." And Vial was intrigued, to say the least. The world of the avant-garde in Paris had become truly huge for the better part of the previous decades, with some art historians believing that the realist and impressionist artists who had founded the landmark Salon des Refusés had birthed the wide-ranging term of avant-garde to refer to those artists who experimented and played by their own artistic rules rather than rotely emulating the works of those who came before. Now, we have discussed the Salon des Refusés, that first major anti-exhibition, in previous episodes, but it set a new standard in many ways, allowing the temperaments and interests of the artists themselves to be more prominent. And that was something that appealed to Berthe Vial. She loved being able to understand an artist's personality in their works, to feel their energy. And if she wasn't able to sense those characteristics, then a work of art wasn't considered good enough to be sold at her gallery. There was someone who Vial considered to be good enough pretty early on. While still working with her brother, she met a Catalan living in Montmartre who was tasked with getting more promotion and play for Spanish visual artists. And it was through this man that she met another Catalan, a young man named Pablo Picasso. According to Vial, the first work that grabbed her attention was Picasso's 1900 Le Moulin de la Galette, a bright and garish Parisian nightlife scene now in the collection of the Solomon R. Guggenheim Museum in New York. It's not the typical Picasso painting that you're probably imagining right now. It's no blue period, no rose period, and it's certainly not quite cubism yet. And it owes much to the work of Edgar Degas and Henri de Toulouse-Lautrec as much as anything else. But Berthe Vial noticed its power immediately. And she became the first dealer to sign Picasso, who was just 19 years old, and who, by the way, was still living in Spain at the time. But still, Berthe Weil got her first big client, and Picasso got his first big ally. Berthe Weil makes a big move in 1901, and we are going to share all about it next, right after these quick messages. Remember that by supporting our advertisers, you keep us going. So thank you for listening. What's a game where no one wins? The waiting game. And when it comes to hiring, don't wait for great talent to find you. You should find them first with Indeed. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Indeed is the hiring platform where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring partner that can help you do it all. Find great talent fast through time-saving tools like Indeed Instant Match, assessments, and virtual interviews. With Instant Match, over 80% of employers get quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match their job description the moment they sponsor a job, according to Indeed data. Can we just talk about how great Instant Match is, by the way? Candidates you invite to apply through Instant Match are 3 times more likely to apply to your job than candidates who only see it in the search. And with Instant Match, as soon as you sponsor your post, you get a quality short list of candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description, and then you can invite them to apply right away. How cool is that? It's like Indeed does the hard work for you. Indeed is a powerful hiring partner, delivering 4 times more hires than any other job site combined, according to Talent Nest. So join more than 3 million businesses worldwide who use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to update your job post at Indeed.com/art. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/art. Indeed.com/art. Terms and conditions apply. Pay per qualified applicant not available for all users. Need to hire? You need Indeed. You guys, I am doing a lot to make Art Curious as cool as possible and my life as meaningful as possible right now. So all of that means that I need to feel my best. But I've taken vitamins before with hopes of improvement in my health, and I haven't gotten that much out of them. And that's probably because vitamins aren't real food. But GEM is. GEM is the first real food, whole food multivitamin. GEM Daily Essentials come in these bite-sized cubes that provide a comprehensive blend of over 15 superfoods, botanicals, probiotics, vitamins, minerals, and more. And it is all concentrated into one very, very tasty bite. This GEM Bite is your first true non-synthetic multivitamin alternative, and it features only plant ingredients, all combined to have an amazing effect on your energy, mood, your focus, and beauty. So it is your entire daily nutrition in one delicious bite. It is real food that is fully absorbed by your body for maximum bioavailability and to fill the nutrition gaps in your diet. And if you're anything like me, I don't love swallowing pills, so being able to have this tasty and very delightful little bite with my morning coffee in flavors that are delectable is just a treat. It feels like I am giving myself a sweet little snack, but I'm also doing something incredibly healthy for my body. You can choose from an array of tasty flavors that best fit your preference, but I have to say that I love the citrus ginger flavor. It makes getting my nutrition easy and, again, so delightful. You can now get 30% off your first order when you go to dailygem.co/curious. That's dailygem.co/curious to get 30% off your first order. dailygem.co/curious. Welcome back to Art Curious. In 1901, Berthe Weil and her brother Marcelin faced a crisis, spurred on by their differing ideas for the direction of the gallery and their varied managerial styles. When the situation came to a head, the siblings broke off their partnership, but Berthe was undeterred. She wanted to be an art dealer, wanted to sell avant-garde works by fresh and exciting young artists. That was never in question for her. And so she did what was probably rather revolutionary for the time. She started her very own gallery, completely independently, using her dowry of 4,000 francs to pay for the space and its renovation. Now, this was considered a rather risky endeavor for 2 reasons. The first is that she wanted to only work in the avant-garde arena, so she was choosing to showcase the works of artists who, at the time, were unknown to most of her clientele. Neither she nor the artists had name recognition to support them, so it was a perilous choice for someone who was just starting out on her own. But the even bigger problem was that Berthe Weil went into business by herself as an independent, single woman. During this juncture in French history, and certainly in other parts of the world as well, the idea of a woman running her own business, especially in a male-dominated field like art, was almost unfathomable. And it also wasn't rare that women's property was automatically transferred to their husbands when they married. And Berthe Weil did not want to do that. She didn't want to get married. She wanted to do things herself and on her own. And so she made two big moves right off the bat. The first is that she hid her gender by naming her gallery the Weil Gallery, rather than identifying herself with her first feminine name. And secondly, she refused any marriage proposals that came her way during her lifetime. She never married. And more than anything, that was a safeguard that she enabled for herself so that she could live the life she wanted to lead. If there is one thing we can say about Berthe Weil, it's that she was filled with an immense courage and an immense understanding of herself and what she wanted, which was no easy feat. With the opening of the B. Weil Gallery in 1901, Berthe Weil officially became the first female gallery owner in Paris, and one that was dedicated, as her business cards noted, as a, quote, place for youth. Weil's commitment to the avant-garde is amazing, and the list of amazing artists whom she represented and exhibited is almost laughable in how incredible it is. She continued to promote Picasso's works, showcasing his landmark Blue Period as early as 1902. In her earliest years, she was drawn to Fauvism, that brilliantly colored style adopted by Henri Matisse and his cohort, and legend has it that Weil was the first to give that group a gallery exhibition. She represented Georges Rouault, Francis Picabia, Kees van Dongen, Georges Braque, Raoul Dufy, Maurice Utrillo, Suzanne Valentin, oh, so many big names. And when Diego Rivera lived in Paris from 1911 through 1920, she was, again, the only art dealer to present him in a solo art exhibition. And she adopted Cubism and its daring explorations of form long before any other dealers did. That eye of hers, that sense of connoisseurship, they were extraordinary. And her vision of what would make a good work of art, it was iconic. So much of the greatest hits of modern art, as funneled through Paris in the early decades of the 20th century, have so much owed to Berthe Weil. Not that it was easy, neither for her nor the artists, of course. At first, her gallery was so small that she would crisscross lines of rope so that she could hang canvases by clothespins to make up for a total lack of space. She even used the galleries as her makeshift home for a while, eating and sleeping there when the workday was all done. And as I mentioned previously, she took a risk in choosing to showcase artists who were young, up-and-coming, experimental, and diverse. A fair share of art buyers at the time thus overlooked her and her stable of painters, considering them a dicey investment. Sometimes she got lucky, and it paid off. But sometimes it didn't work, and that made it difficult for her to retain artists as her clients, too. Because her sales weren't always reliable, artists would often move on and move up to well-established blue-chip art dealers like Paul Rosenberg, Daniel-Henri Kahnweiler, or Ambroise Vollard, major players who not only had confirmed reputations and name recognition, but who also had the capital to offer substantial stipends and exclusive contracts. So off went Picasso, off went Matisse, off went Braque. Could Berthe Weil have worked to build up funds to offer these similar perks? Sure, but she knew that to do so, she would have to exhibit a slew of artists who were more profitable and sought after, and that was a no-go. She would sacrifice her comfort, her financial stability, and the reputation of her gallery to support the artists that she loved and she believed in, because she never sacrificed her vision. Sometimes, though, that vision caused some issues. That's coming up next, right after this second break. Come right back. My kiddo is wonderfully curious. He's always asking incredible questions about the world around him, like how do caterpillars turn into butterflies? Why is the day getting longer? And why is it getting warmer now? Spring brings along new curiosities and a chance for kids to connect with the world around them. There are so many incredible opportunities to learn, and it's the perfect time for discoveries. And with a KiwiCo subscription, kids can discover the engineering and mechanics behind everyday objects, the science and chemistry of cooking, geography and culture from new places, and brand new art and design techniques, all through seriously fun, hands-on projects where they and you can learn about a new STEAM topic every month, ranging from rainbows to rocket ships and everything in between. Discover subscription lines for kids of all ages, ranging from infants and preschoolers all the way up to teens. And grown-ups are also welcome to join in on the fun. My son and I both enjoyed receiving his very first Kiwi crate recently. We got exactly what we wanted, which was the Atlas crate, full of immersive, hands-on, high-quality activities that help us explore and appreciate world cultures, which is perfect for my little traveler. This month, we learned about India, made our own mandalas, and blended up our own mango lassis, and we loved every moment. And now we're counting down the days until the next box arrives in the mail. It is our favorite day of the month, and it is sure to be your child's too. With KiwiCo, you can do your part to encourage your children to be innovators and creative thinkers. They won't believe what they can build and accomplish with KiwiCo. So give them the tools to learn new skills, build new experiences, and make new connections to the broader world. There's something for kids of all ages, and there's no commitment, so you can pause or cancel anytime. Step into spring and celebrate the season of discovery with a KiwiCo subscription. Get 30% off your first month plus free shipping with any crate line with code ARTCURIOUS at KiwiCo.com. That's 30% off your first month at KiwiCo.com. Promo code ARTCURIOUS. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy. Life can be overwhelming, and many people are burned out without even knowing it. Symptoms can include lack of motivation, feeling helpless or trapped, detachment, fatigue, and more. For me, burnout manifests itself in days where all I want to do is lie in bed and watch Netflix. Does that ever happen to you? I usually associate burnout with work, but that is not always the only cause. Any of the roles in our lives can lead us to feel burned out, and BetterHelp Online Therapy wants to remind you to prioritize yourself. Talking with someone who can help you figure out what's causing stress in your life is important. I used BetterHelp to connect with a therapist in less than 24 hours, and it was nice to be able to begin talking via phone and chatting right away. There was no waiting, no traveling, no sitting awkwardly in an office. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It is much more affordable than in-person therapy, and like me, you can be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours to get going as soon as possible. So give it a try. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and Art Curious podcast listeners can get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/artcurious. That's BETTERHELP.com/artcurious.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Welcome back to Art Curious. Bert Weil had the gift of identifying great work by soon-to-be great artists, and she supported them and her visions for them without wavering. If she believed in something, in someone, she didn't hesitate to back them up. But sometimes her fervent dedication to them, and to airing her opinions loudly, led to some skirmishes. This is where the famous exhibition of Amedeo Modigliani's nudes come into play. as she was wont to do, Berthe Weil gave the young Italian upstart a shot at capturing the attention of the stodgy Parisian art world. And when Modigliani arrived with the paintings for his upcoming solo show, Weil had a choice. Recognizing the sensitive nature of the hirsute female nude, bearing not only wisps under her arms, but also a small triangle of pubic hair, which was not the norm in art history at that time, Weil could have hung the paintings in the back of her gallery, away from the public eye. But she went bold and went in the entirely opposite direction. She had a history of using her storefront windows to express her political opinions, for example. And what better way to showcase rebellion against the prudish Parisian bourgeoisie than putting those furry nudes front and center? Well, it sure caught the attention of Paris, but not without her reputation being dragged down a bit. And not before Weil herself was dragged down to a nearby police station after refusing to kowtow to a constable's orders to remove the offending works immediately from her window. One of the things I love most about Berthe Weil, unsurprisingly, is her commitment to other women. About halfway through her 40-plus year career as a gallerist, she made a conscious decision to devote nearly half of her art exhibitions to the works of women artists, many of whom, like Picasso and Modigliani before them, were enjoying their very first exhibitions because of Weil's work and attentions. Now, this is truly awesome, especially keeping in mind the lack of disparity that we still see today regarding gender in museum and gallery exhibitions, not to mention disparity in race, class, religion, and more. But Berthe Weil recognized some of this early. She was ahead of her time, a true visionary. Berthe Weil ran her art gallery in a few different locations in Paris from 1901 until 1941, when the Second World War caused her to shutter it. At the risk of stating the obvious, but I'll go ahead and do it anyway, the war was rough on Weil, mostly because she was Jewish and spent most of the war years avoiding anti-Semitic activity and persecution. Even before the onset of the war, the rising tide of anti-Semitism in Europe had taken a serious toll on Weil and her gallery. And that, combined with an equally rampant misogyny, meant that Weil never really found success during her lifetime. After the end of World War II, her savings were depleted, leaving her almost destitute. But a small lifeline appeared. A congregation of artists and fellow art dealers came together in 1946 to hold a special fundraiser, donating over 80 works of art for sale, with all proceeds going to support Berthe Weil, the smart, dedicated art dealer who had given a start to so many and who had stayed loyal to them all. Let that just sit with you for a minute, because it is a sweet testament to the level of respect that Weil garnered. And the fundraiser helped. Weil, who was eventually recognized as a Chevalier of the Legion of Honor by the French Republic, was able to manage a meager retirement in her little apartment. She passed away at the age of 85 in 1951. In the biographies of artists like Picasso, Matisse, and Modigliani, Berthe Weil is mentioned, yes, but not as much more than an aside or a footnote, perhaps with the brief exception of Modigliani. But she deserves so much more. She deserves to be a bigger part of their stories and of the history of 20th century art. Part of the reason that Weil has received so little attention in the past is due to so many of the things that we've already discussed today, some good, some bad, all brought together like the many heads of a hydra from Greek mythology. There's anti-Semitism, the misogyny, Weil's devotion to the avant-garde, her risk-taking, her lack of major funds. Writers like Picasso's biographer John Richardson ungenerously described her as a, quote, homely Jewish spinster with spectacles thick as goldfish bowls. Such characterizations are totally gross, and they also lead readers to dismiss her as unimportant to the narrative of these artists' lives. Luckily, we have the work of a new generation of researchers, like the French art historian Marianne Le Morvan, who has worked for more than a decade to establish an archive and biography of Berthe Weil. It was she, by the way, who discovered an auction catalog that confirmed that 1946 fundraiser in support of Berthe Weil. Le Morvan is truly undertaking a massive challenge because Berthe Weil left behind so little, hardly any surviving correspondence, inventory records, and the like. But what we do have is her 1933 autobiography, which Le Morvan has been working to translate. It's called Pain dans l'œil, which roughly translates to something like boom, right in the eye. And in that book, Weill acknowledges that she, quote, took a risk of going modern, unquote. A risk that made her stand out as among the great discoverers of so many of the most amazing artists of the century. She was a tastemaker and a changemaker. She was a great supporter of women artists and stands out as someone who paved the way for other female art dealers and gallerists. It didn't come easy. It still isn't coming easy. But perhaps Berthe Weill never expected it to be. As she declared in her autobiography, quote, "To struggle, to defend myself. That is the story of my life." Thank you for listening to this episode of the Art Curious Podcast. This episode was written, produced, and narrated by me, Jennifer Dassel. Huge thanks to Mary Beth Soya for her awesome research for this episode and almost all of our episodes this season. Our theme music is by Alex Davis at alexdavismusic.com, and our logo is by Dave Rainey at daverainedesign.com. Our podcast is co-produced by Kabunki, podcasts, creative video, and more. Subscribe to their show, Subgenre, a podcast about the movies, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and at subgenrepodcast.com. Kabunki, leave your mark. The Art Curious Podcast is sponsored primarily by Anchorlight. Anchorlight is a creative space founded with the intent of fostering artists, designers, and craftspeople at varying stages of their development. Home to artist studios, residency opportunities, and exhibition space, Anchorlight encourages mentorship and the cross-pollination of skills among creatives in the triangle. Please visit anchorlightraleigh.com. The Art Curious Podcast is also fiscally sponsored by VAE Raleigh, a 501c3 nonprofit creativity incubator, which means that you can donate tax-free to Art Curious to show your support. To find donation links and for more details about our show, please visit artcuriouspodcast.com. We are also on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Art Curious Pod. Check back with us soon as we continue to explore the lives and works of women behind the unexpected, slightly odd, and strangely wonderful works in art history.